Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 10, Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees, text number 39. Enam purva kritam yatta Rajana Krishna Vairinaha Jahustain te tad atmana Kitak peshas krito yata. Ena. This sinful activity of blaspheming the Supreme Lord. Purva kritam. Executed in previous births. Yat. Which. Tat. That. Rajana, kings, Krishnavarina, always acting as enemies of Krishna, Jahu, gave up, Te, all of them, Ante, at the time of death, Tat Atmanaha, obtaining the same spiritual body. And form. Kitaha, a worm. Peshaskrita, captured by. A black drone. Yata, just like. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Not only Shishupal and Dantavakra, but many, many other kings who acted as enemies of Krishna attained salvation at the time of death. Because they thought of the Lord, they received spiritual bodies and forms like His, just as worms, captured by a black drone, attained the same type of body as the drone. Purport, the mystery of yogic meditation is explained here. Real yogis always meditate on the form of Vishnu within the hearts. Consequently, at the time of death, they gave up their bodies while thinking of the form of Vishnu and thus attained Vishnu Loka, Vaikuntha Loka, where they receive bodily features the same as those of the Lord. From the sixth canto, we have already learned that when the Yama Vishnu Dutas came from Vaikuntha to deliver Ajamila, they looked exactly like Vishnu, with four hands and the same features as Vishnu. Therefore, we may conclude that if one practices thinking of Vishnu and is fully absorbed in thinking of Him at the time of death, one returns home back to Godhead. Even enemies of Krishna, who thought of Krishna in fear, Baya, such as King Kamsa, received bodies in a spiritual identity similar to that of the Lord. Enak purva kritam yatad rajak rajanak krishnas vairinaha jahus tente tad atmanaha Kita peshaskrito yata. Not only Shishupal and Dantavakra, but many, many other kings who acted as enemies of Krishna attained salvation at the time of death. Because they thought of the Lord, they received spiritual bodies and forms the same as His. Just as worms captured by a black drone obtained the same type of body as the drone. Principle in the Bhagavad Gita is yam yam antakale chamam eva smaran bhaktva kalevaram yak priyate samadbhavam yati nas yatra samshayaha. That anyone, Krishna says, who thinks of me alone at the time of death, then he obtains to me. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajant antakalevaram tam tam eva iti konteya sada tad bhava bhavitaha. So whatever one thinks of at the time of death, that one is sure to attain that same destiny. Yam yam vapi. Vapi means body, I guess, or form. Yam yam vapi smaran. Thinking of the form, some form. Let's see if we get the right. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tya jantyandikalevram. Tam tam evaiti kuntiya sadatad bhava bhavitaha. Vapi. Yam yam vapi. Vaapi. Not at all, actually. Whatever at all. Smaran, remembering. Nature. Bhavam, nature. Tyajati, gives up. Ante, at the end. Kalevaram, the body. Tam tam, similar. Eva, certainly. A.T. gets Kuntiya, O Son of Kunti, Siddha always, tut that, bhava, state of being, bhavita, remembering. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O Son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. Tasmat sarveshu kalaishu, mam anusmara yudhicha, vayarpita mano buddhira mam evaishaitya samshaya. So this is Krishna's advice. Since if we think of him at the time of death, then we go to him. And if we think of something else, that's where we go. Therefore, Krishna says, Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu. At all times. Tasmat, therefore, kaleshu, at all times, sarveshu, in all places. Tasmat kaleshu sarveshu. Mam anusmara yudhisha. One should continuously remember me. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yudhisha. May arpita mano buddhir. And therefore, arpita means what? Does anyone know? What does arpita mean? Common word. Surrendering, or worship, actually. Sometimes it says worshiping. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, this word arpita is also there in terms of, let's see. Krishna says, patram pushpam palam toyam yomai bhakti priyachiti taraham bhakti uparitam ashnami priyatatmanaha. That if one offers me love and devotion, a leaf, a flower, some root of water, I will accept it. Yat karoshi yad asnasi yad jihosi didasi yad tat krushva tat tapasi kundiya tat krushva manarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, whatever austerities perform, do that, O Son of Kundi, as an offering to me. So arpanam there means offering. And here it means surrendering, offering. I mean, I guess when we offer something to Krishna, it's like surrendering it. It's like if you have a little child and you put your finger on the child's hand, immediately closes and won't let it go. It's mine now. Wait a second, it's mine. No, it's mine. Let it go. No, sorry, it's mine. So we're like little children. Anything that comes into my hand, it's mine, it's mine. Give it to Krishna. No. Let him come and take it. Oh, oh. So offering something to Krishna is surrendering. And with your activities dedicated to me and your mind surrendering to me, dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain to me without doubt. So this is the point of having mind and intelligence. Intelligence allows us to see things properly, and if we see things properly, then we should see things in the relationship to Krishna. And by the development of intelligence, then we accept that everything belongs to Krishna. So that's what intelligence means. To see that everything belongs to Krishna. And then further development of intelligence to accept that everything belongs to Krishna. Because anyone who doesn't see things as belonging to Krishna, guess what? They think either it belongs to me or it could by some means belong to me. It's called the give and take. You give to me and I take from you. So the material world is existing on the give and take principle. Get everything I can from everyone and get everyone to give to me whatever that I can. But actually the other point of view is everything belongs to Krishna, and the advantage of seeing that everything belongs to Krishna is that one will see everything as Krishna's pastime, and the illusory energy will not take one's intelligence away. As soon as we stop seeing things in relation to Krishna, then Maya will immediately take our intelligence away. Dhyayato vishyam pumsam sangaste shupajayate sangas sanjayate kama kama krodo bhajayate krodo bhavati samoha samaha smriti vibram sat smriti bram sat purinashat pranashati. That's just how the material nature works. When we contemplate the objects of the senses, we become attached to them. And from attachment comes lust. From lust comes greed. From greed comes frustration, anger, comes illusion, comes forgetfulness, comes loss of intelligence. And then one's activities become material and bind one to the material energy. So unless we see things in relation to Krishna, not during class, but all the time. It's not that in class everything belongs to Krishna, and outside of class, everything's up for grabs. A class is meant so that during the day we can remind ourselves that actually everything here belongs to Krishna, and therefore if I want to further strengthen my intelligence, I have to utilize these things in Krishna's service under the guidance of Krishna's representatives. So that's the second step. By seeing things properly with our intelligence, then our mind becomes a little bit clearer, and then when we accept the intelligence coming from higher authorities, how to utilize these things, then our mind even becomes clearer. And we want to do something to please Krishna, then Krishna himself personally appears in our remembrance and our mind becomes spiritualized. To accept everything belongs to Krishna is called karma yoga. To see what Krishna wants me to do with these things, that's called jnana yoga. To do things that Krishna wants me to do with his energy to please him, that's called bhakti yoga. And by bhakti yoga, we actually become Krishna conscious. By karma yoga and by jnana yoga, we get freed from the lower modes of nature, and by devotional service, we become conscious of Krishna by bhakti yoga. Now, we find that anyone who thinks about Krishna at the time of death, certainly they'll get some auspicious position, or more auspicious than they had, but there are different degrees. Here the Bhagavatam is glorifying meditating on Krishna at the time of death, but that doesn't mean that everyone who meditates on Krishna gets the same destination, as explained in the Nectar Devotion. That if I see the Kamsa, for instance, I don't know where Kamsa went exactly, but here it mentions he got a similar body form of Krishna. Exactly what happened, I don't really know. Kamsa was not in the line of the same demons as Dantavakra and Shishupal. In any case, generally speaking, those who think of Krishna out of envy or out of fear, like Kamsa, generally, they don't get a spiritual body. they emerge in Brahman. Kamsa was always thinking about Krishna, but he wasn't thinking about Krishna in a favorable way. Therefore, his activities of thinking about Krishna were not considered devotional service, and therefore, generally speaking, such personalities emerge in Brahman. So there's a difference between entering into the kingdom and entering into the palace. If you enter into the kingdom, you're in the kingdom of the king, but only when you enter into the palace and meet the king do you actually have a relationship with him. To enter into Brahman is simply to enter into the kingdom. But that doesn't mean you have met the king or his family or his friends. Therefore, our acharyas, they generally don't think that merging in Brahman is such a great deal. Kaivalya narakayate, tridasha pura akasha pushpayate. That is considered to be hellish, narakaya. Kaivalya, becoming one with Krishna, narakayate, is considered to be hellish. Better, tridasha pura akasha pushpayate. Better to go to the heavenly planets. At least there's some opportunity to hear about Krishna there. Although it's going to the heavenly planets is considered to be just like a flower in the sky. There are no flowers in the sky unless you throw them up there. But they won't stay there usually. So the idea that there's flowers in the sky is more or less reserved for the people taking drugs. Maybe they see flowers in the sky, but they don't actually exist in the sky. They only exist in the distorted mentality of those who think that there's flowers in the sky. So some of the heavenly planets, their relief from material suffering is quite great, and therefore, relatively speaking, people are happier in the heavenly planets because they're suffering less. But it's only a dream, and therefore the dream ends after some time. One comes back to the middle planetary systems to suffer again, and even to sometimes go to the lower planetary systems to suffer extremely intensely. Therefore, it's the process of thinking about Krishna, if it's done out of fear or envy, is not considered really all that auspicious. There is a process, though, of karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga. And one has to start somewhere from trying to think about Krishna by at least recognizing that this is his energy. We may not be so conscious of Krishna all the time, but at least if we acknowledge we should utilize Krishna's energy in Krishna's service, we won't be afflicted by the modes of material, the lower modes of nature. It's inevitable. Indriyani charitam yan mano nu vidyate tadasya harati pragya vayor navam ivambasi. Just like a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the roving senses in which the mind becomes fixed can carry away a man's intelligence. So what's the analogy used there? Does anyone can figure it out? There's a boat on the water. You can see the boat. And it's being swept away by a strong wind. So what's the boat? What's the wind? What's the boat? What's sweeping away the boat? Which one is it? The boat being swept away? The wind? Okay, As the boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the roaming senses, which is the roaming senses? It's obviously the wind. Listen to it again. As the boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, so even one of the roaming senses in which the mind becomes fixed can carry away a man's intelligence. So the roaming senses are like the wind. And the intelligence is the boat. So the roaming senses, which the mind becomes fixed, is carrying away a man's intelligence. The boat, the roaming senses are carrying it away. And the mind is the sail or whatever else the wind catches hold of and carries it away. Therefore, Almighty Arm, one whose senses are restrained from their objects, is certainly of steady intelligence. So that's all we have to learn. Any questions? That's all we have to learn. Now, not everyone learns that. Yani sha sarabhutanam tasyam jagrati samyami yasyam jagrati bhutani sani sha pashutomune. What is night for all sentient beings is the time of awakening for the self-control. What is night for the self-control is the time of awakening for all sentient beings. I always get this wrong, but it's close enough. If we look at it. Ya Nisha. Does anyone know what Nisha means? Yes, it's night. Yani sha sarabhutanam. What is night for all sentient beings? Living beings. Do they say sentient beings? All the beings. Yani sha sarabhutanam. Tasyam jagrati. What is jagrati? Wake. Awake. Wakeful. Jeev jago. Easy to remember. So what is night for all living beings is a time of awakening for the self-control. Yani sha sarvabhutanam tasyam jagrati samyami. Samyami means one who's controlling his senses. Yasyam jagrati bhutani, and what is the time of awakening for all living beings, sani sha pashutomune, is the night for the munis, for the thoughtful person. So what does that mean? No one knows what that means. What does it mean? What is the yani sha sarabhutanam? What is night for all living beings? What is the night for all living beings? Yes, they think controlling your senses is abominable. They think it's will lead to, what do they call that, when you, repression. You're repressing. You're going to explode. You're going to become a brahmastra. Cross between a brahmachari and a brahmastra. A grihastha. A brahmastra. Yanisha Savabhuta Tasyam Jagrati Bhutani. So what their thing is abominable is horrible. Those who are self-realized, those who are controlling their senses, think is wonderful. They think controlling the senses and the mind and fixing them on Krishna is wonderful. And they think Krishna is an imagination. You should fix it simply on the sense objects. Yani sha sarvabhutanam tasyam jagrati samyami tasyam jagrati bhutani. And what is night for all the living beings, what is the daytime, the time of awakening for all living beings, that is the opportunity for sense gratification. Sanisha Pashitomune is seen by the self-realized souls, the introspective sage, as abominable, completely waste of time. That, therefore, it leads to what? If we see like that, Puryamanam Achala Pratishtam Samudram Apa Pravishanti Yadvat Tadvat Kamiyam Pravishanti Sarve Seshanti Matnoti Nakama Kami. Person who is not disturbed, in spite of the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is always being filled and is always still, can alone achieve peace and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. So due to our past activities, therefore their desire is flowing through our mind. Now what are we going to do? Can we grab them and throw them out of our mind? No, it's not possible. As soon as you grab one of those desires, then the desires grab you. Oh, you're interested in me, huh? Okay. Let's have some fun. I don't want to think about you. What don't you want to think about? Tell me again. So you go from attachment. Wow, this is fantastic. I'm completely Maya. I'm really enjoying. And you think, well, wait a second, I'm suffering. Get out. And Maya says, yeah. Why should I get out? Get out. Get out. Okay. I'll think about getting out. Attachment and aversion. So the idea is if we're actually thinking about Krishna, then even though the desires are flowing through the mind, we won't become disturbed by them. And if we're not thinking about Krishna, then we'll always be disturbed. Something will disturb us. Sa-nisha. And what are those disturbances? Vihaya kama yak sarvam pumam strati nisriha nirmamo nirahankara sashanti madhigachiti. Those who live free from desires, person who gives up all desires is sense gratification. Vihaya kama yak sarvam pumam charati nispriha, who lives free from desires. Nirmamo, who gives up all sense of proprietorship. Nirahankara, and is devoid of false ego, he can actually attain peace. So we want to be peaceful, we want to be free from anxiety, then we have only these enemies to give up. Desires of sense gratification, all kinds of other desires, desire for proprietorship, and our false ego. We give them up, then we'll become peaceful. And what will be the advantage of that? Esha brahmi siti parata, nainam prapi vimuyati, sidvasyam antikalevi, brahma nirvana richati. That is the way of spiritual and godly life, after attaining which man is never bewildered, being so situated even at the hour of death, one can enter into the kingdom of God. So people don't know that the spiritual life is to give up desires of sense gratification. How many churches do you go to and they tell you, or temples or mosques or synagogues, and they tell you give up your desires of sense gratification? Have you anyone ever been to a church that tells you that? Who tells you give up all desires? Actually, they say if you come to our church or synagogue or temple or mosque, all your material desires will be fulfilled. God will bless you. And give up proprietorship? Maybe I'll put something in the kitty, in the box, and hope it grows. Look, Krishna, I'm giving you a loan, but we expect interest back. Nirahankara, who wants to give up their false ego? We love our false ego. That makes us happy, makes us feel important, makes us feel significant, makes us feel better than others, makes us feel that we're progression. This false ego is the last thing in the world we want to give up. We'd rather die than give up our false ego. As a matter of fact, we like our false ego to live forever. We'll die and we'll have a little plaque telling us how great we were, and we'll come. And we'll enjoy how people read the plaque and appreciate how great we were. It's called false ego. So to give up the false ego is the most difficult, but to give up the sense of proprietorship and sense gratification is also equally difficult. But if we can give that up, then we can actually think about Krishna in reality, with devotion. Otherwise, we'll think about Krishna in relation to our false ego, or our sense of proprietorship, or our desire to fulfill our desires, or our desires for sense gratification. In any case, somehow or another, we can think about Krishna and gradually become purified, but we shouldn't forget that our aim is not to merge in Brahman, get rid of our problems. Our aim is to come to the platform of devotion for Krishna so we can become qualified to go to the spiritual world, not to the Brahman effulgence. So I'll stop there. Any questions, comments? Yes.
So you mentioned that the demons who think unfavorably of Krishna, like Kamsa, for example, they attain the merge. They merge into Brahman. But also, Shishupal was always thinking unfavorably of Krishna. He was always criticizing Krishna.
Yeah.
As we know, he got the blessing that 100 offenses to Krishna, and then he has to stop, and then he can continue. So, I know it was Krishna's leela. He was one of the gatekeepers. Yeah. But how to understand that one?
Well, it's part of Krishna's pastime. Krishna has to make it interesting. Has to have some personality to the demon. And a demon is unfavorable to Krishna. We don't find demons glorifying Krishna favorably. Otherwise, they would be devotees. So every demon is always unfavorable to Krishna.
Them are not even thinking about Krishna.
No, everyone thinks about Krishna. Because that's all there is Krishna. So they're not envious of Krishna directly because they don't understand how great Krishna is. They're envious of everything else. The little things about Krishna. And in general, they're envious of Krishna. They're trying to kill Krishna, deny his existence. Anything else? Yes.
So you mentioned at the end that our goal is not to merge in Brahman or to solve our problems, but to come to the platform of devotion. But how can we give up this idea that we don't have to solve our problems, that we are not in the center, that we have to develop this devotion towards Krishna?
Sadhana bhakti, that's what the whole process of sadhana bhakti is. Try to fix the mind on Krishna. Chant offenselessly, even feelingly, what to speak of lovingly, and try to listen attentively. That's the process. If we call out to Krishna sincerely, then Krishna will reciprocate. If we believe there is a Krishna, there is a Srimati Radharani, and we call out to them sincerely to engage us in the loving service, that's what they'll do. Krishna is fulfilling all our desires already, according to what we deserve. He's in our heart, noting all our desires, so we develop some desire to please him, to engage in his loving service, to please his pure devotees. Then Krishna will reciprocate very happily. He's already reciprocating with our desires, so why won't he reciprocate with some spiritual desire? So it's simple. We have to accept the process and follow it, and then it becomes simple. Otherwise, it seems very difficult. It's like trying to touch your ear with your hand behind your back. It can be done. Simpler ways of doing it, though. So you can approach Krishna very simply, just calling out his name with feeling that we want to engage in your loving service, or we can do so many other things. But it's difficult. Anything else? So we agree that our aim is to develop love for Krishna is a simple way of doing it. Or there are many other ways of doing it too, directly or indirectly. But that's the simplest. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.